Lions fans. It's time for the podcast you've been waiting for. The show where Kool-Aid runs blue, faces turn red, and rose-colored glasses never go out of style. This is the Detroit Lions Podcast. Your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection. And now, two guys who run a 4-minute 40. Chris and Case.
Hey, howdy-ho, Lions fans. Welcome to the Detroit Lions Podcast. This is episode 112. This is the official Detroit Lions Podcast for Reddit. I'm your host, Chris, and with me is my good friend and co-host, Case. How are you doing, my man?
Hi, this is Case. I can't join you right now because I'm having cosplay with a bunch of weirdos.
In today's show, we're going to hit the drafting table for a Detroit Lions podcast party, talk all about that. We're going to break down training camp with our in-depth analysis from the sidelines. We're also joined by BJ Mitchell. He's going to talk about the journey of an undrafted free agent. Sandman, he wakes us up to talk about the upgrades at Ford Field, and there's a whole lot more. We've got a giant show. It's going to be a good one. You ready to go, Case?
This ain't Case. This is the Riz live from Cleveland, Ohio. Let's do the show.
Let's kick this off and break it down.
All right, a couple of quick announcements. First off, fantasy football is back. We're getting late, guys. You're not going to have much time to sign up, so make sure you head on over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com/fantasy. Beginners League, you're gone. No chance. It's already full. We've got a couple of spots left in the Intermediate League and a couple spots left in the Champions League. Anyone can join either one. The pricing is there on the page, and there's cash to win. Show us what you got. DetroitLionsPodcast.com/fantasy. Come in, join, and see if you can win. I'm in the Champions League. If you got it, bring it, baby, because I'm going to take you down. Also, don't forget about the IDP Guys podcast. They're doing some helpful stuff for you guys that want to do IDP fantasy or any fantasy stuff. Head on over to youtube.com/Detroit Lions Podcast and you'll see their weekly show up. And they're going to give you all the great insights that you need for your fantasy football teams. Don't forget to check us out and help us out on Patreon. Special thanks to Dylan from
Guam.
We got Michael, Matthew, Eric, Lucas, Joel, Nick, Noodle, Jeffrey, Brendan, Justin, John, Rand, Ross, Matt, Morgan, Randy, Peter, Matt G, Kalen, Scott, Joel, Greg, Marcus, Lucas, Danny, David, Richard, Bryce, Chuck Nasty, Jason, Fight Me, Case, Mike K, Floundericious, and of course, our very first donor, Mathis. We also want to call out our newest patrons, Mihak and Malcolm. Malcolm, thank you again. We got you in there, buddy, and appreciate all the great messages you've sent. For our Patreon people, just know I close in 2 days. 2 days after we record this, I'll have my house, and we'll get underway to building the studio. Once that studio is built, it will include some live video. We're going to do some live video of the shenanigans that happens behind the scenes when we record with Riz. It's a lot of fun, and you guys will be able to watch that in process and kind of see a little bit of the making of the show. So it's going to be a little give back to you guys. If you would like to join them, head to patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast or head on over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and click on the Patreon link. Anything you can part with is helpful. Any dollar, anything you guys can do. We appreciate every single one of you. Make sure to give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, and check us out on Twitter at DET Lions Podcast. That is DET Lions Podcast. It is the very best place to see Case
scraping poutine off his floor mats.
Rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you find us. We love those reviews, and they are extremely helpful, especially the five-star jobs. And because of broad support, we're not going to do dramatic reads of five-star reviews anymore, but we are threatening you. If you don't start leaving those reviews, we will do reads, dramatic reads of those five-star reviews. So don't forget to give us those reviews on iTunes and wherever you find us. Also, make sure to leave a voice message via Skype at Detroit Lions Podcast, all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast, or give us a call on the Lions line at 929-33-LIONS. It's 929-335-4667. We love it when you leave a message. It's that time of year. That's when you get a little bit of extra alcohol in your blood. The end of the summer is coming. Football season's almost here. Leave us a message and get a chance to hear yourself on the show.
Tighten your chin straps, kids. It's time to review This Week in Reddit.
All right, it's time to talk about all the fun and exciting things going down this week in Reddit. And I have to start off, Riz, this time with just a shout out to everyone who joined us at the Drafting Table Brewery in Wixom. First off, thank you so much to all the folks at Drafting Table. They were awesome hosts. And, you know, as a guy who makes beer myself, and I have for a number of years, and I've got a pretty good setup. I'm doing it 15 gallons at a time when I make it. I know how hard it can be to make good beer, and the Pilsner, which is one of the hardest styles of beer to make, was perfect. It was clean. I was going to start with the light beer and work my way to the darker stuff tonight, and I never left the Pilsner all night. Great stuff. Thank you guys out there at the Drafting Table. You want to give a shout out to the owner there, Riz? I know you you know him, and
I do. I can't think of his name though, so we'll beg that. But I do want to thank Amber. She was the person who coordinated it for us. She's the pub manager. She did a great job. Our bartenders there, I don't remember your names because I got legally intoxicated while we were there. But y'all did a great job. We had a very good time. Even the band that was there, a couple of dudes that were playing, they did some interesting takes on some songs, and they were a little loud, but you know, we had a wonderful time. I recommend the Coffee with a Blonde. Excellent coffee bean scented lager if you ever get out there. Really good place. And from what I remember, we had a really good time there.
I think you remember the time there better than the post party, the after party. But again, yeah, just a big shout out to the Drafting Table. Thanks, guys. That was awesome. And we will see you again. Also, we need to give a special thanks to Dan Miller. He made it.
Oh, yeah.
His Dan Miller came out of town, and he still came by. I left the kids with somebody and dropped in and saw us. That was great.
He spent a good hour with us, you know, shook hands, took pictures, talked to people, you know, answered questions. Couldn't have been a better guy. So thanks so much, Dan. It was great to I've interacted with you probably 150 times. I'd never actually met you in person. Thanks so much, Dan. It was great to meet you.
Yeah, Dan and Brandy both are just that kind of guy. Really, really great people. And what you get, what you see and what you hear is what you get. We're lucky in Detroit to have guys like that to be our voices for the Lions. Let's move on. Also, we had some great listeners come up. John, he came. So here's the funny part. Lived in Southern California forever. He listened to the show from the very, very beginning. We were maybe 30 miles apart.
Maybe no way.
More than that. Yeah. He flies 2,000 miles to visit his dad and see us over at the Drafting Table. So, John, it was great to meet you. Thanks for joining us. Also, Just a Flesh Wound came out. He was great. Great time. Stayed till the end at the Drafting Table.
Yes, he did. Eric, great dude.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that guy a lot.
Yeah. Eric Schlitt from the Lions Wire, one of those USA Today sites that those dweebs do, you know, right, Riz?
Yeah. Click.
Even Alex and Ryan from Pride of Detroit stopped by. Thanks, guys, for joining us. It was a lot of fun to have you there. You guys were a lot of fun, had a lot of laughs. And Brett Whitefield from PFF, he was out there and we had a good time with him all weekend. He was really great.
And he officially got his PFF Brett moniker on Twitter today. So congratulations, Brett. You're a great dude. I really enjoyed meeting you and spending time. He had a lot of very good observations in training camp when we were there. And he's somebody that if you don't follow him already, you definitely need to, because he really knows football, and he's a great dude.
Yeah, absolutely. He was great. And he was a lot of fun to hang out with. He's got the whole thing. He was probably at the Drafting Table the drunkest of us. And don't worry, they took care of him. He couldn't open his eyes for the last hour and a half. It's so funny. So that was good. Some of the other guys got pretty drunk. They talked about it on their show as well. But it was good. It was all in good fun, and made good friends with people that we didn't otherwise. I didn't otherwise know. I know you've known these guys, and it was good to kind of hang out and talk to them. But I also want to give a quick shout out to one of our favorite guys, Mathis. He made it out there. Mathis, thanks so much, man. It was great to hang out and have some fun. And he made it all the way. We did the Drafting Table Brewery. They closed at midnight. Across the street was this Wixom Bar dive bar, as divey as you can think. And then that's when the real self-abuse started, Riz, wasn't it? That's when we started seeing shots and oh my.
Yeah, there was a whole lot of drinking and debauchery going on there. And yeah, I do remember bits and pieces of that, but it was dark. It was a dark and stormy night in my stomach, too.
Yeah, well, we got some periscopes. Purposely bad video on those.
Oh, dear Lord.
Didn't anyone, but we did. We had some hot takes from Risden. His biggest one was that we needed to trade Rudock for Kellen Moore. And then once that was done, we could go ahead and trade Stafford for Ndamukong Suh and go ahead and start Kellen Moore for this team, and that would get us to the Super Bowl. So we appreciate those takes, Risden. We know where your true heart lies when you're talking like that after you've been drinking.
What can I say?
All right. Also, last big thanks to Sean, Nathan, Brandon, Corey from Detroit Lions podcast crew. You guys came out, spent the weekend with us, did the whole thing at training camp and the bars, and it was great. You guys are awesome. Had a great, great time with all you guys. Got some really great ideas and stuff coming for the site. And then, of course, Jeffrey, thank you for joining us. It was awesome to hang, bud.
It was. We had never met in person before. I know that will probably surprise a lot of people because we do this show together quite a bit. We do the Reddit NFL and we just communicate all the time, but we had never physically met before. So it was finally great to put a name to a face and to hang out. We had a wonderful time and it was awesome. I'm so glad you came up and were able to coordinate it and it worked out and we got to spend, a weekend, Yeah. Hanging out and doing Lions stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
Doing Lions stuff. Yeah. And you are as tall, dark, and handsome as I always imagined. All right. We'll move on to the next topic. This is going to be the big topic for this week in Reddit. We got a lot of information. We spent a lot of time doing some analysis. We got a lot of video we've sorted through and talked about. And some of it's gone up on Twitter. And we'll kind of punch on that a little bit as we go through this. But we want to talk about training camp and what we saw over the weekend and what we saw from the players and so on. So I think the first thing we want to do is sort of set up what training camp was like. For those who haven't been or who don't get to go, there was a difference between training camp on Friday and Saturday. And Rizwa, how about you kind of just expand on that for folks so they can kind of get a broad idea of what kind of conditions and circumstances they were working under when we make our different observations here.
Yeah, Friday we were out at Allen Park at the team's training facility, and it was cold. I was freezing.
It was fine.
It was cold.
It was, what was it, 71 degrees and 81% humidity, and you were shivering like you had the DTs. I tweeted that, by the way. You were like, I'm from SoCal, and I was fine in shorts and a t-shirt, dude.
Yeah, I was hoping for suns out, guns out, and it was cloudy, and it just wasn't my day for weather.
So a pot and a half of coffee.
I did drink a pot and a half of coffee. Thank goodness.
Oh, man, it was good.
Yeah, so Allen Park has done some upgrades there too, and we'll talk about that in a second. But then Saturday was at Ford Field, and Saturday was an actual mock game. Where they had offense going against defense, whereas in Friday's practice, there was quite a bit of 11 on 11 and 7 on 7, but it's also positional drills and the guys, they weren't in full pads, it's not full hitting. It wasn't Saturday either, but it was closer on Saturday than it was on Friday.
There were some hits. Yeah, there were some hits.
Yes, there were some hits. And I'll say this, having been at Cleveland Browns camp the last 2 days, there's a lot more hitting going on in Detroit than there is in Cleveland. So we'll get that going for us. Yeah.
So, and I think about it, like, if to just to kind of paint the picture a little bit, you've got a giant space that's much, much larger than a standard football field. I don't know.
Yeah, they have
four fields, but it's like they hit it in four quadrants, right?
Yes, they have two full fields and room around that as well that they work with in Allen Park. And they primarily work on the two fields that are at the – if you walk in, you go to your left, that's where they are. And you used to be able to stand right next to the stadium or to the sidelines and in the end zone. And they have built seating. And the drawback is that you can't get as close as you used to. But the upshot is there's actual seating, which is nice.
And for the players, the upshot is you can't get as close as you used to.
Right. And, if they tried to keep it very family oriented. And if you had been out there in the Jim Schwartz era, you'd know that that's not something that they had done in the past. They did have a lot of music cranking. They've upgraded the sound systems there. They played the radio edit version of the music, but it was something that where they allowed the players to choose their own music, which is something different from the past. And I think that was very well received. I think we had, there's a whole lot more seating especially at the far end. You used to not be able to go all the way over to the other side of the second field as you walk in, and now you can. There's a lot of seats over there, and yeah, that wound up being – there was a lot of the offensive practice actually went on over there, so we didn't get to see the offense early in the practice, but then we wound up seeing it very well later in the practice. And then, you know, Saturday's Ford Field, and we had a wonderful time there. We had a special, you know, Mr. Sandman took care of us, which was...
Yeah. He'll be on later in the show to talk a little bit about some of the things he's seen in the evolution, but we've got to give him a lot of credit. Boy, what a great time and kind of an expanded opportunity we were allowed, thanks to his generosity and some of the kind of inside view stuff he was able to get us.
Yeah, and Saturday, you know, they had a good crowd. I think they had 25,000 people inside Ford Field, and they had the concessions open. They had the cheerleaders out, you know, and they ran it like a game. It's not where they're playing four quarters. They did different situations throughout the game. They had a 2-minute drive. They had a 4-minute drive. They had a drill where they had like under 20 seconds to get three plays and get a field goal. And they executed that really well, too.
They did have timing. They timed it out in four quarters and at halftime. But they started by doing a couple drives, like sustained drives. But then it was situational, and they'd set the clock. You have 7 seconds left. You have one pass. You got to get in field goal range, right? And they did one where they got down there, got the yardage, and they ran the field goal unit on the field. And then they muffed the snap because, you know, Sam Martin isn't there. But there was a lot of situational stuff, just like you said, where they were setting up for different things they might see on the field in mid-game, but they didn't try to run them sequentially, like what got them into those situations. So good stuff. Right. And I love to see that kind of coaching where Caldwell was on the field in the middle. He had Jim Bob Cooter there. It looked like Austin was down there with him. And he had some of the kind of assistant coaches and trainers and stuff down there doing some of the other stuff, some of the play calling or getting the guys in the right positions and calling them in and out. So they were getting some coaching as well, the sideline staff. And they were playing, you know, two teams. They were split up across two teams to do that on Saturday. It was great to see how they did that, building expertise amongst the staff as well as with the players. It was good to see. I really enjoyed and thought that it was beneficial to see the players work like that. And then Friday, there's one story. Well, one thing I want to talk about, and we'll kind of go into some of the deeper things of what we saw, I guess, here, Riz. The thing that stood out the most for me, and it was the point where I said, holy crap, why am I not taking video? I was watching the quarterbacks, Kaya and Rudock and Stafford, and they were doing six reps on bad snaps. And it was just the three of them rotating, and it was a coach snapping the ball to them. And there was a coach on the right side where the quarterback was facing, and the left side was Fells. He was working with it. He was just getting reps from the different quarterbacks. He was there instead of a coach. And I was like, well, that's pretty cool. He's working on that kind of chemistry. It's just a quick opportunity to do more reps with the quarterbacks. So they would fling a snap high, low, left, right, wherever. The quarterback didn't know where it was going. And they had to recover and get the ball and turn and throw it to the right. And then instantly another snap came. They'd recover, get the ball, turn, and throw it to the left. And they would do six of them. And they were going through those drills. And it was really cool to watch them do it. But the one that stuck with me the most is Stafford did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the sixth one came, and he looked to the right and just ripped it to the left to Fells. Never even looked at him, and he hit him dead in the hands. And Fells caught it. That was a really, really cool play. And that's the point where I said, God dang it, why am I not running video? But it was absolutely beautiful. He never turned his head towards Fells, put it right on his hands. It was good stuff there. Really love to see those guys working like that and working together. And with that, I want to take a little piece here on just the difference in how guys practice and how they look out there. On those drills and all the drills that I saw Stafford on, he has a level of intensity and passion, right? He does.
He never
slows down, right?
He takes every practice rep very seriously.
And even in between, right? He's got a focus. Like he's not screwing around at all. And he's out.
He's no chicanery at all. He's all business out there.
All business. Now, you contrast that, right? And that's his style, and it works for him, and it's great. And I'm not saying either one is right or wrong. I think they're right for the individual player. But you look at Darius Slay, again, on Friday, he's out there. He does his rep. It's 110% business concentration. The guy's hips rotate and move 100% faster than anyone else who's in the quarterback position. He's really rolling. As soon as his rep is over, though, he's dancing. He's out there. He's loose. He's having fun. He's laughing.
He's hanging with Chad Johnson. He's, he's skipping across the field and just having fun. He gets periodic banter with fans who can yell loud enough to hear over the music. You know, he's having fun. He's a very jovial, fun loving guy. Like you said, though, when he's on the reps, he's dialed in too. And it's just it's weird how different their preparation styles are for the same event.
And you know, I'm kind of more of a Stafford guy. I get that focus kind of thing, and I've got to stay, I don't want to say in character, but in that mode, right? I couldn't, the way Slay can turn it on and off, that's probably kind of the mentality of a cornerback, right? Where you got to forget the last play if things didn't go right and like it never happened and move on. Where a quarterback's probably a little bit different in how they have to approach the game, but I couldn't do it like Slay, and it works for him, right? I can't knock him at all, but to be able to go in and out like that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
And I tell you what, Slay looked pretty good too when he was playing. He was very good both Friday and Saturday. One of the issues is they need him to be really good, but thank God he is, because that guy. And after practice on Friday, it's open and fans crowd around the sides and to get autographs. You can sign whatever they want. And Slay took a lot. He was one of the last guys to leave.
Yep.
He was gracious. He took pictures with little kids. He talked to them. He asked them what their names were. He put his hand on their head. He really enjoys. We both said this. He really enjoys being Darius Slay.
Yeah, he does.
And
for sure.
That's a great quality to have. So it's always fun to see that with him. You know, a fun loving guy, and he brings a lot of energy to the guys around him too. He doesn't like when people are just like static. He likes that kineticness.
yeah, that's a great way to put it. That's absolutely true. I mean, and look, he made time. He signed a ball for me. It was nice. I really enjoyed that. And I know you're not a big autograph guy.
I'm not.
I'm trying to get myself a nice set of ball of autographs for the podcast, kind of a memorabilia piece for the studio. But it was good to get his on there too. Add him to Billy Sims and some of the other guys. But that was good. So I think Friday was a little looser than Saturday was. It was still the work they did was good on the 7-7 and 11-on-11. That stuff looked really good out there. Those guys there were some big balls thrown out there and some long touchdowns. And, I don't know. Would you give it to the offense or the defense on Friday?
I think the offense won against the defense, specifically Kenny Golladay won against the defensive backs, I think is the biggest. The biggest takeaway I had, I thought the tight ends did better than the linebackers as well. So you probably do have to give it to the offense there.
And isn't it true that this time of the year, typically the defense outperforms the offense?
Oh, absolutely. And I can tell you from being 2 days in Cleveland camp, oh my God, their defense is so far ahead of their offense. It's not even close. And, I'm trying to do the comparative thing in my head because they're very different teams and they have very different strengths. Like the Browns have Emmanuel Ogba and Myles Garrett, and they're both just incredible pass rushers. Those guys are going to be a serious problem for people this year. Not to make this into a Browns thing, but, both of those guys would be the alpha rushers in Detroit, especially with Ziggy sidelined, and he's still sidelined. Mm-hmm. But the way that the Lions have to manufacture a rush by scheming it against their offensive line, whereas the Browns have a really good offensive line of their own, but their defensive line can handle it. At least they're handling it now. That was concerning to me because you're right; the defense should be ahead. And right now they're not. So that's not necessarily a great sign. Although the flip side of that is, man, the offense, they looked good. They really did look good. Other than left tackle, and we'll talk about left and right tackle, but the passing offense, the skill position players, and the right side of the offensive line, man, they're going to be fun to watch this year. They're going to be explosive. And seeing Amir Abdullah back out there and cutting and moving pretty well, and Theo Riddick catching the ball, although he did drop one. They were both in red jerseys, so they couldn't get hit. But it was still nice to see Abdullah run at full speed. He didn't really test the cut all that much, not that I saw anyways. But just getting those guys back there, man, that's such a huge asset.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. All right, so let's move on. We'll do a little transition here from Friday to Saturday. Talk a little bit about some of the nice stuff. I mean, on Friday, we got to get there. We had some breakfast burritos, thanks to that VIP treatment that Sandman got us.
Thanks, Sandman.
Get to sit under a tent when for the brief spout of rain. That was
We got to sit under a tent, and then they had somebody come out, a nice-looking young lady, wiped the seats down so we could sit, which was awesome.
Yeah, and you know, I did not expect that kind of treatment. That was really, really nice. It was very, very nice. So that was cool. Moving into Saturday, Sandman hit me up again late on Friday night. He said, hey, you feel like doing a special behind-the-scenes tour? I was like, hell yeah. And we were able to do that. And we talk about that a little bit with Sandman later. It's a really, really great interview. So I don't want to wreck that. But there's one thing we didn't talk about, and I know some of our listeners want to hear about it. I'm going to call it my Martha Ford moment. you know, as the president of the Martha Ford fan club, I just want to say that, you know, when you get to see your perfect person in front of you, right? it's pretty amazing.
Your elder soulmate.
Oh, yes. And so we were going through the club level. And it was shut off to everybody else. So it was kind of, you know, it was a special thing. We're walking and we had to stop because they had the three golf carts waiting, and in walked the Ford family, and Martha, the matriarch, came in, and 15 feet away, I wanted to get an autograph, but I composed myself.
You wanted more than an autograph.
I'm trying to be nice. I'm being nice. I kept myself composed, and my knees were a little wobbly, but that was a real special moment. I mean, there they rolled in and they got in the caravan of golf carts, and I, you know, silliness aside, I have to say, she was down there all day. She stood
on the sidelines next to Rod Wood for the entire game, and she was interested in what was going on. There were a couple of times where you saw her, you know, beckon a coach over to ask, you know, okay, something. We don't know what it was about.
Might have had the Nerf dart gun that got around her hip, right, and started shooting some fired darts, right?
But this woman's in her 90s.
Incredible, incredible stamina for a woman.
Somebody that age to be able to stand there at fairly rapt attention without needing a golf cart or support or anything, in and of itself, that's physically impressive. But I mean, she's dialed in. Anybody who says that Martha Ford doesn't care about this team has no clue what they're talking about.
Absolutely not.
She desperately cares about this. She wants to win. They have put so much time, energy, and a whole lot of money into improving the fan experience with the team. And we'll talk about that with Sandman too. I have been won over by Martha Ford. She has been a very good owner. You cannot complain about any of the ownership decisions since she, you know, inherited the team, you know. And
yep, you're 100% right.
There's a lot of people who have, when I've said these things, they've commented, you know what, you're right. It's too bad that she hasn't been the owner for longer, or that she's so old and won't be the owner that long.
Yep. There was a lot of worry when she took over from William Clay when he passed away, you know, and to see this, it's like, man, maybe William Clay could have stepped down and relaxed a little and had maybe a couple more years in his life and let Martha take over. I have all the silliness aside, I have all the respect in the world for her and what she's done for this organization. And it is interesting, even after spending all that time on the sideline, it was about 10 minutes before the end that she left. And she was on the cart, and the cart was rolling, and she had him stop, and she got out. And Kelly Stafford was sitting down in the front row, and she stopped off and talked to her for like another 10 minutes, just stood there talking to her back and forth. Great report. I mean, people talk about the whole contract situation and everything else going on. Just a kind person who, you know, I don't want to say has no problem talking to the help, right? But I mean, it's kind of a weird way to put it, but she sat there and talked to her just fine during, and had a great, you can tell there's a good relationship there. There's a lot of mutual respect. Very, very interesting. I'm really, really impressed with Martha, what she's done with the team. And, she's really set this organization on the right path. And Rod Wood, I have to tell her, I have to really say that is one hell of a hire. She really kicked it with that one.
They got that right. And we were scared to death when he came out and said, I'm not a football guy. Everybody was like, oh, what have we done? What road are we going down? But the fan experience in training camp in Ford Field, and if you get a chance to go, you got to go because, man, it's pretty darn sweet. It really is. And, you know, just the commitment to the little details. And Sandman talks a lot about this, about how they have really listened to what the fans had to say and what they wanted. The Wi-Fi, and this was one of the experiences that got for me Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
You used to have serious trouble with like, I would try to tweet something while I'm at, you know, anything in Ford Field. And it would take, like, 5 minutes and 10% of my phone battery to tweet one little thing. The Wi-Fi was kicking. They have boosters all over the stadium, no matter where we were. And we were pretty much all over that place.
We did at least 5 rounds around the stadium.
Yes, we did. If we were wearing Fitbits, we had at least 15,000 steps by noon, which was great. We needed to work it off so we could have fun later. But yeah, it was that's a very big thing, especially for somebody like me who lives on social media and, you know, tries to get stuff out. And I'm not just there for, you know, Lions games. I go to their bowl games. I've gone to high school games there. I've gone to concerts there. It's fantastic that they have, you know, done all this. And it's free. And it's easy to connect. And it saved my phone battery something fierce. I was armed with 2 phone batteries. I only got down to like 44% on my primary battery. And I would have been less than that on my secondary battery if they didn't have that. So another good little thing, just can't say enough about how positive we feel about how the organization is going as an organization. Not always with the on the field product, but everything surrounding that is so much better than it used to be.
Yeah, for sure. Now I have to ask you, how did you appreciate the VIP ride experiences you got to the stadium?
Oh, that was nice. I was impressed that we got a parking spot, although they kind of screwed us on where we needed to go.
Yeah, that was part of the walking around the stadium thing.
That was part. We had to meet Sandman by gate A, and we parked by gate G, and they did not let us cut through the back side. We had to walk all the way around, but it worked out okay.
I was actually referring to your handsome driver. I heard he was quite something to look at.
You know, I'm not used to Uber. It's illegal where I live. You cannot use an Uber in Ottawa County, Michigan, for whatever reason. So I decided, since I don't have the app on my phone, I'll pal along with this guy, Chris. And
most handsome driver you've ever seen, right? I mean, the tip you left. I mean, it was just the tip, and I appreciate
just that, just the tip.
All right, let's get into Saturday then a little deeper.
Than the tip.
Yeah, let's get past the tip on that. Let's kick off with Valuaga. He really looked good, Riz. I was
Jeremiah Valuaga. You need to know this name. He was activated off PUP and played like a bat out of hell with his hair on fire on Saturday. He had, I think he had 5 sacks. I know we saw 4 of them. And we don't always focus on exactly the same thing in every play, but there were a couple of times where, my God, you can't help but see how great this guy is. They had him playing as a stand-up linebacker. This is a guy, he's a defensive end by trade, but he's built like a tight end, and it conjures memories of Larry Webster. And I hate to say that because that guy was that was a joke. This guy, at least from what we saw in the 2 days we were there, especially Saturday, my God, he's wow. Fast, yeah. He's strong, he's smart, and he's going at it, man. Yeah. Every play, he is shot out of a cannon at the snap.
Yeah, he's a guy that is going to give offenses a lot of trouble if given the chance, or at least he looks like it. We'll see how things go through the preseason.
I'm a little worried that he's a camp superstar. He's this year's Andrew Peacock, or, you know, random guys from the past. Mm-hmm. But at the same time,
he could be a George Johnson or a Kerry Hyder.
He could be, and I think where we're really going to – I think we're going to see him on special teams. I think that's his ticket to making the 53-man roster.
Good point.
So if you're watching the preseason games, watch for him on special teams, because this is a guy he's very long. He's very fast. This is a guy who can block punts and kicks, and I would love to see him do that to cement himself. He's a really interesting player. He was dogged kind of in the process. He had some off-field difficulties and a bit of a checkered past to himself, but he's put it all together. The Lions loved him in the pre-draft process. I've talked to his agent a couple of times. His agent tipped me off very early in the process. Hey, man, the Lions really like this guy. He's exactly what they want as that sort of he's going to play the role that I think we all thought Kyle Van Noy would be good at, that sort of outside linebacker who can rush the passer. But it didn't work out with Van Noy. This guy is he's very athletic. He's long. I think he's 6'5", 256, I want to say. And there were some teams that actually saw him as a tight end convert, but the Lions were like, no, man, we want this guy to play defense. And they gave him a healthy little signing bonus to sign up as an undrafted free agent. And so far, man, mission accomplished. He's at least making the practice squad. And for a guy of his status with his background, that's a real accomplishment. And he could do more than that.
Yeah, for sure. That was great to see. Let's talk about what maybe wasn't as good to see and might put some flags up. The offensive tackles. That was pretty... It was nothing short of painful, wasn't it? It was. I mean, I didn't see. I saw Storm Norton out there. I mean, do you want to start on your high note and work your way down, or do you want to work your way up to a Storm?
Let's start with the positive. No. Yeah, let's start positive. yeah, Storm Norton. He's an undrafted rookie for a reason, and it shows. He has some potential, but he is not ready to play in the NFL right now, and I think he would tell you that after what the experiences that he's had. Now, he's a tall guy. He's a legitimate 6'8". He makes me feel small. He does not have a lot of bulk in his lower body, and it shows. He can't anchor very well, and he's not as quick a foot as you'd like for an offensive tackle. So if he doesn't win right away with his length and punch, he's in a lot of trouble. That happened with Valoaga. I know he beat him for a sack a couple of times. So, I mean, it's nice to see him getting an opportunity. And I think, again, I think he's better than what Cornelius Lucas was when Cornelius Lucas was in the same situation.
Better than
and
Corny?
They're similar players. Oh. Yeah, I'll say that. I'm good with that.
There's a lot of Storm and love here.
There is. maybe it's my Mac boner. I don't know. So then we get to Cyrus Kwanjo. And Cyrus Kwanjo was abysmal in Allen Park on Friday. Maybe it was the bad weather or something. He was better Saturday. In fact, he had a move, and I tweeted it out where he got me spontaneous. He clubbed him like a baby seal. I mean, he has that's his signature like move. Like if a guy is trying to get into him, he'll push him out and like club him on the back of the shoulder with his inside hand. It's very effective. And he had some positive moments in Saturday's action. And that was nice to see. But again, this is a guy that a team in Buffalo that needs offensive line help gave up on. So have lowered expectations there. But he's probably the best option to replace Taylor Decker in the short term because, my God, Greg Robinson. Oh, I really don't want to talk about how bad he is. It's disturbing to me. It's shocking to me that so many people that I respect so much in the draft online and by the way, the NFL draft community, the people who are employed in pulling NFL paychecks were so freaking wrong on this guy. He's not getting better. It's legitimately hard to watch him. And he's getting beat. He got beat by Valoaga a couple of times where he barely touched him. And he had a rep on Friday where he got beat, and I don't remember who beat him, where he physically did not touch him going around the edge. It's embarrassing. He is a serious – I don't know how he can make the team, to be honest with you. I really don't.
So are we hearing that Fells is going to have his work cut out for him this year?
We're going to see a whole lot of 12 personnel. We're going to see – Fells, Roberts, and Ebron, if Ebron can get healthy and back on the field. We missed him this weekend, and we did miss him, and the team missed him. But you're going to see a lot more two tight end packages this year, and some of that is a function of we have pretty good tight ends, and some of it is a function of our offensive tackles need the blocking help.
Yeah, absolutely. That's if there's one place to draw a huge amount of concern from this team. It is at that left tackle position, and it'll come together. I mean, that's not a position you want to be weak, especially with Matthew Stafford coming a little thinner than what you might like. He himself
he did look thinner, didn't he?
Yeah. He came in. So I don't know. Look. And I'm not gonna kind of choose my words too carefully here, but for so many years he had that baby fat, right? And then and then last year he came in and he was ripped. He was a buff SOB when he rolled through that door for camp, and he stayed buff throughout the year, and didn't seem to have much of that little baby fat. The baby fat this year is all gone. But the problem is he's leaned out. If I were to say, he was more wrestler previously and more Tour de France rider now, right? That super lean muscle mass, kind of like
he's lost face
kind of thing. Like,
he's lost the frat boy punch me face. He really has.
Oh, I never thought he had a punch me face.
Oh, I used to get that vibe from him. And I say that as a frat boy that some people have wanted to punch.
Maybe I have a love for him and Martha. It's hard to rationalize between the two. But he's looking a little bit too lean for me. But again, looking at him on the field and how he's delivering the ball, he's still got the speed. He's got the power. You know, there's one thing I want to talk about Saturday. And that was at the end when Kaya was running the ball throughout the game. You see Stafford throwing the ball. He may be lean. He may be, you know, thinner and lighter than he was, but he still has that zip. He still has that power. That ball is whistling through the air. And then you see Brad Kaya get on the field, and he throws the ball, and you're like, all of a sudden you're using the calendar to clock how fast it's going instead of a stopwatch.
It's very Kellen Moore-esque. Oh, it really is.
It was so obvious to see in person. And the joke was, the last play of the game, it was set up to be a Hail Mary. He steps back. It's time to throw the ball. The clock runs out, and he pumps like he's going to throw it, and then he keeps it to himself. And
he holds it.
Yeah, the reason that I said that he hold it is they didn't have the 5 minutes to wait for the ball to get from the 40-yard line to the end zone.
The fans were upset too, and some of the defensive players were like, "Come on, Brad, throw the ball!" You can see that they wanted to shut it an interception there because they knew that ball was going to hang up there long enough for them to go get a concession and come back and pick it off.
Yeah, it's really something. And, you know, I hate the phrase Stafford haters, but if you're a guy that isn't on the Stafford train, you just have to come out and see him live and see what that ball looks like compared to anyone else delivering.
You really do. Like, I'm in Cleveland right now. I've been at Browns camp. I've been watching Brock Osweiler, DeShone Kizer, Cody Kessler, and Kevin Hogan. All right. None of those guys are in the same stratosphere as Stafford. And that includes Osweiler, who's got a pretty dang good live arm. But the fact that Stafford can control it and throw it, he can put the ball wherever he wants, whenever he wants it from multiple arm platforms. He's gotten better at throwing it on the run. And maybe it's because I see around the league and I go up close and I see these guys, you know, I'm going to see Drew Brees this week, Thursday night, which is awesome for me. But I'll also get to see, you know, like the likes of Garrett Gilbert and other people. And that just makes me appreciate Matthew Stafford that much more. And I know that we do want Stafford to be better and to lead this team to winning. But my God, if you think there's somebody out there right now that they can get that would be better than him in the next 3 years, you're insane. Stop watching football. You're doing it wrong.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. And I'll tell you something else too. And I was on the wrong side of the conversation on this one. I'm happy to admit it. I don't care. But I was thinking, I was just doing my, you guys have heard me do this where I think outside of the box and I come up with, maybe there's a different way to approach this. And, you know, most people attribute it to my similarities to Belichick to really look at things differently, but whatever. Anyway, so we're sitting there and I'm looking at Rudock and I'm looking at Kaya and I'm like, I don't care if either one of these guys is on the field. If we're stuck with either one of them, we're going to lose. We're going to lose heartily. Why then even have a backup quarterback on the roster? Forget it. Use the roster space for something else that's going to give you a better chance at winning, right? That was my kind of in the moment kind of crazy out of the box thinking. And the one situation that really forces you to do that is if your injury to your quarterback is minor, maybe it's just for the rest of the game and you're halfway through the fourth quarter. And it's like, you can still win the game. You can hold out and with the win or whatever. That's why you have a second quarterback on the roster. But I'll tell you straight up, if Stafford's out for any length of time, this team is done. There's no chance of winning. There's no chance of the playoffs. It's all over at that point. So I think I don't think that line of thinking is completely crazy. But if you have a guy who's, you know, if you got Julian Edelman on your team, for example, I don't know that you need a backup quarterback at the point with this team. You just don't have any talent, enough talent to carry the guys at that point. So anyway, yeah, he is definitely the difference between winning and losing for this team. And if our guy Stafford goes down, you can just write it off. Just write it off and look who's going to be the first overall pick next year.
Well, we won't be Jets bad, but we could be close.
Yeah.
All right, actually, I think the Ravens are going to be terrible too. I have to keep promoting that on as many places as I can. If Joe Flacco isn't right, their quarterback's Ryan Mallett, and they've already lost five. They've lost five starters to injury already, plus two guys who retired. I'll get my thing back in there. I think that's a last place team.
Yeah,
I'm gonna ride that. That's my hot take for the day.
No, I don't think it's that hot, buddy. I think you're right in there. So hey, let's talk about our boy Kenny Golladay.
We get to talk about good things now.
Yeah, nice. let's get out of that sad place, that old Lions place, and talk about the new Lions. He was out there. He had speed. He had strength. He had grace. He had me at hello.
The thing that really stood out to me was how fast he gets from like 10 to 30 yards.
Yeah.
And there was a play Friday morning where Tease Tabor tried to jam him, and it was kind of a half-assed jam. And we'll talk about Tease's part on this in a minute. But the Golladay took off, and you could be forgiven for thinking it was Calvin Johnson running in the open field. He's physically similar. I'm not saying he's Calvin Johnson, but physically when he's running, he looks like Calvin Johnson. He's got that big frame and that long stride, but man, it's also moving really fast. And he pulled away from Tabor, and he did that a lot. And this is a guy, he's used to making acrobatic catches. When he was at Northern Illinois, I mean, he had a cavalcade of crap at quarterback.
Yeah.
They had a game where they played three. They had four guys throw passes.
How much do you think that helps the guy get better though? I mean, look, there's a certain groove you get into and a chemistry you create with a quarterback by spending time with them. But in one sense, it could also maybe be detrimental because you get too used to that delivery and that style and that chemistry. If you can adjust and do well with multiples, doesn't that help you become a better
receiver? It does. It teaches you how to concentrate on the ball and focus on the ball all the way into your hands and secure it strongly. That's one of the reasons why they have, you know, quarterbacks go through different rotations. Like Stafford will take reps with the twos or wide receiver just so they mix it up like that. That's a very important thing to do. If you remember back in the day, Braylon Edwards could not catch.
Yeah.
One of the problems, though, that he had was that he had always, he'd only ever taken reps with the guy who was the starter. So and it was, the low pressure of, catching passes in practice when you're not going to get popped. And he never figured out how to concentrate and look the ball all the way in and secure it. And we've already seen that with Golden Tate does it very well, although he did leave one on the field this weekend. But Kenny Golladay, his hands are, you can see it. His hands are strong and he concentrates very hard. He's not a guy who's ever going to have a drop because he's running before he catches the ball. And I think that's something that I was very happy to see.
Yeah. Yep. So otherwise on wide receivers, we had Marvin Jones get the first touchdown of the day. He did get muscled off the ball one time, but otherwise looked okay.
He looked very good running across the field on crossing routes.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. That's a good point. And then Golden Tate was fine. I don't want to say he was great. I don't want to say he was bad. I would just say he was fine. He was Golden Tate out there, which is just, it is what it is, right?
He has never been known for being a practice player, even back to his days at Notre Dame.
Yep.
So I'm not going to, like you said, he was good enough to prove that he deserves to be the starting wide receiver for the Detroit Lions.
Yep. Stafford's first throw on Saturday was an interception. We can talk a little bit about that. Maybe we should talk about it back when we were talking about Stafford. So sorry if we missed this one on you, but I would not put too much stock into that. I threw some video of that up on the Detroit Lions podcast Twitter if you want to actually see the play.
Yeah.
Darius Slay got an interception out of it, but you look at the play at the beginning, everybody was moving all over on the line, right? It was just a big old mess of flesh. And afterward, Stafford said he thought it was going to be a penalty, and it would have been if it was a game. But you know, in these situations, they run them a lot looser. They're not running them as tight. They'll call a penalty. You'll see a flag go up, but they'll still run the play anyway, and then they'll give them yardage for the play. Right? It's just they just want to kind of they hit all the different points, but they want to let the guys run through the whole sequence, because if you stop the play, that doesn't help the guys who are running the routes or anything else. So they'll run through the whole sequence. So Stafford thought he had a penalty, which he would have had. He winged the ball down there on a free play, and Darius Slay made the play and got the interception, and he did it. You know, he moved inside and got it very, very well, had a little juggle on it, but great play on that interception. I wouldn't get down on Stafford for that at all. I think everybody did the right thing on that play under the kind of revised rule system you have in a practice or a mock game.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair.
Okay. So let's talk about linebackers. And as we were kind of setting up here, you made a great point that for linebackers and running backs, it's kind of tough when they're not going full speed, right? Those are guys that hit holes hard or hit other players hard.
And, that's right.
And going half speed, it's like anything, right? If you golf, you try to do a half speed swing. At least for me, I just jack that ball somewhere ugly. It just doesn't work. I have to do my swing. Bowling, you can't just do half a throw down the lane. It comes out all awkward and monkey-like. And I think that happens to these poor linebackers and running backs. So when you look at Jared Davis, he didn't really excite, but it wasn't kind of the world of excitement that you'd expect for a new linebacker, is it?
No, it's one of those deals where the first impression that we both had in seeing him out on the field is like, wow, he's big.
Yeah.
And he looks the part. And he you can see him also corralling the guys around him. And Tyre Whitehead deserves some credit for being a good veteran here. I think he was helpful with that. But Davis, this is an alpha male at the linebacker position. He has that, you know, Stephen Tulloch kind of attitude where he's a leader and an outward leader. And I think they missed that last year. And so I was happy to see that. But yeah. It's very hard to judge when these guys are not wearing full pads, when they're not allowed to hit people hard. You're not supposed to tackle anybody in these things. There was a couple of tackles, and he hit Marvin Jones once, and Marvin hit him back. And Davis was smart enough to walk away from that, which shows that he understands his place on the team, which I was kind of happy to see. But the biggest things that I wanted to see from him was a coverage drill. And when they did 7-on-7, there were a couple of times where he saw right where the tight end, not only where he was, but where he was going. And he beat the tight end to that point. And he did it one time with Michael Roberts, and he did it one time with Darren Fells. And the one time, and I forget who the quarterback was going to throw the ball there, and he wound up throwing it at Fell's feet because he knew that Davis was going to pick it. And that's the kind of thing we haven't had that in Detroit since Levy's one good, healthy, fine year. You know, a guy who can sniff things out and react to it before it happens. And I think I saw enough of that from Jared Davis, especially on Friday, that I'm encouraged. He is certainly going to start, and I think he's going to be rookie linebacker. He's going to make some mistakes, but long term, the prognosis is really good for this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I will not argue at all. Let's end the training camp breakdown here, and this is a lot of stuff going on in the show, but I want to end it on a high note with Jamal Spiru Agnew. only 20s kids will know that one.
yes.
On kick returns, this guy was lightning. He was electrifying every day out there. He was just looking hot, wasn't he?
He was. And I'll go back to Friday morning when I'm shivering and I turned around and Kent Platt was there with us. And hi, Kent.
Hey, Kent. And thanks, Kent. You were a lot of fun out there, by the way. It was nice. It was great.
We had a nice lunch Friday after practice with a bunch of guys. Brett and Kent especially were there. Eric was there too, some other people, but it was fun to Kent's a great guy. And I turned around because I knew he'd been at camp for the past 3 days and I'm like, are Agnew's feet really moving that fast? And Kent deadpanned, yes they are. He's got fast feet, my goodness. And it's not just quickness, he's legitimately speedy fast too. We didn't see him a whole lot in coverage, although he did look like he had a pretty good set of instincts. I think he gives up a little bit too much space and tries to close it. Something that also T.J. Tabor struggled with, but Agnew's a whole lot faster than that. And I'll give Eric Schlitt credit on this because he tweeted it out, and he's exactly right because we were all thinking it. If you would have said that Agnew was the second round pick and Tabor was the fifth round pick, you would absolutely believe it.
Yeah, that was a great take.
And I think that is more of a compliment to Agnew and how he fits into what we saw than is it a knock on Tabor, who was asked to do things that he's not done before and won't do a whole lot of in the Lions game. They did not play zone hardly at all. And he is Lovie Smith's wet dream of a cover, a Tampa 2 cornerback. He is not a man press or even off man corner. He's just not fast enough to do that, and I'm worried about that. But as long as they use him with some protection, with some safety help over the top, he'll be okay. I still don't like the pick, and I'm not a fan, but I'll live with that. But I was very encouraged by Agnew as both a return man and as a corner, and I think he's going to beat Quandre Diggs for that inside nickel corner spot.
Yeah, I think you're right. This guy's a lot to offer, and he can do multiple things, which gives him a lot better of an inside shot at the getting a job and getting a spot on this roster. So that was awesome. All right, that's our review of training camp, and this is I have a feeling this is going to be an every year thing. This was great. It was awesome to hang out with all the guys and all the Lions kind of family community. And it was good to get a good inside look and be able to bring that back to share with you guys. Now, remember, if you want to help support the show, there's a great way to do it. It's by doing something you were going to do anyway. Head on over to Detroit Lions Podcast. Hit on that shop link. And you got three ways that you can help the show. You can either do your Amazon shopping. Just go click on that link to Amazon. It takes you right to the site. No pop-ups, no silly stuff. You get a chance to buy anything you want on Amazon. It's just the regular front page and you do all your thing. But they give us a little cut. A little couple percentage points off of what you're going to buy. And it helps the show out. It helps pay for bandwidth and all the other stuff we're doing, the trips, some of the other stuff to get this information to you guys. It's a great way to help the show out. And it's something you're going to do anyway. Just one more little type in DetroitLionsPodcast.com and you do that and then go to Amazon from there. It just takes a second and helps us out. Same thing if you're thinking of your jerseys, whether it's football jerseys, all your Lions players, your new rookies, anybody you want, or even if you're thinking Red Wings, Tigers, and whatever team. I don't care if you're a Dodgers fan. It's all there. It's any sport. The official top quality merchandise, the stuff that's not going to be falling apart. You're sure of what you're getting, licensed, the whole thing. Head on over, Detroit Lions Podcast, click on the link to Fanatics, and that'll get you over there. And lastly, of course, SeatGeek. Get your tickets to theater, events, shows, music, anything you want to go to. If you need your tickets, head on over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Click that shop link and head over to SeatGeek, and they'll give us a little slice of what you're going to do. It's a great way to do all your shopping for all the things you need and help the show out by doing something you are going to do anyway.
Time for a different kind of breakdown with today's special guest.
All right, what a great special guest we have today, guys. This is something a little bit different. We talk a lot about the stars in the NFL and some of the other the greats that are running around and the guys, those household names. But there's something that often doesn't get talked about. You know, this time of year, we're getting to that point where there's cuts, there's guys making the practice squad, there's guys that don't make the team. There's guys out there that have a little bit of a tougher road to the NFL, highly talented guys, guys that could whoop your butt up and down a football field, but for one reason or another, there's something that's just stepped in their way, and they got to work a little harder and put a little more into it to get there. Today, we're joined by BJ Mitchell, one of the guys. He's coming out of Mount Union, Division III national champs. How you doing, BJ? Thanks for joining us, man.
I'm all right. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so thanks for coming on, BJ. It's great to have you with us. And I say this as somebody who I used to live near Alliance, Ohio, so I know Mount Union real well. Oh. That's a heck of a school, man. You had to have had a wonderful time down there.
Oh yeah, for sure. The people there are great. People there are just as good as the football. So I mean, you know, they love their football. They love us. We love them. I mean, it's one big good community. So it kind of, you know, keeps everything, you know, going in the right direction down there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot to do other than football down there.
not much. I mean, you probably go down to Walmart. you know, not much. But I mean, that kind of keep you on track, though. I mean, you know, it's not really a lot to do to get in trouble. So you just, I mean, it's just really just football and school. I mean.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about you. I mean, you've had a journey from high school up through college, and you stopped off at a couple universities before you landed at Mount Union, and recently had a tryout with the Lions. Let's just kind of walk through this timeline from young BJ to where we are today. Tell us a little bit about your high school years and where you came up.
High school, I wanted to go to a Detroit public school, but it wasn't. I think it was a little bit too violent, or for my mom's taste, you know. Yeah. Some of the stuff that was going on in DPS schools, you know, my mom was real, she tried to shelter me a lot. So she took me out. We actually moved out of Detroit. I grew up in Detroit.
If you say like Bel Air and start doing some Will Smith on me.
No, that's my show, though. That is my show. But we moved out to St. Clair Shores, and I went to South Lake. And I had a pretty good career at South Lake, and I thought I did pretty good. At least the film showed, you know, a lot of people thought I was D1 worthy. I thought I was Division I worthy, but I ended up going Division II, which was fine. You know, I got a scholarship, and I was thankful for that. And it was at Northwood, and I was excited about that. But once I got there, I felt like they probably didn't, at the time, they didn't take football as serious as I thought I did, and I felt like I was better than that too. I thought I was able to go Division I and maybe get more exposure, because I knew I was going to need it at my size. So I transferred to Toledo my second semester of my freshman year, mm-hmm. I actually made the team when I tried out with my roommate. He was from Detroit as well. Made the team, but they said they had to do the background check and check my grades. And they thought, since I went to Northwood, which was a private school, yeah, they thought we did trimesters, and we actually did semesters. So they had my credits messed up, and they thought I was ineligible. So when I went to get everything straightened out at the registrar office, they straightened it out, and I went to the football office, and they said they already got the ball rolling, and it was only like 3 days in, but they sent me just come back out in the fall, and like that kind of like gave me an idea on like, you know, how, you know, walk-ons, you know, pretty much how the raw deal that walk-ons get.
Yeah.
I was like, and I knew Kareem Hunt was coming in, and you know, he was all Ohio. I'm like, yeah, it's gonna be tough sledding, you know, just being real with myself, you know. I thought I was as good as, you know, anybody, but I know the political side of things, so I decided to transfer to Mount Union, and so I still have 4 years of eligibility left, because I had sent out a bunch of emails to small schools. You know, I thought I wanted to be a big fish in a small pond. Sure. And my union was one of the schools that responded. And as a freshman, I liked it there. After I took my visit, as a freshman, I ended up starting like week 6 or 7. And I was like seventh or eighth on the depth chart to start with, like in camp. But like week 6 or 7, they took me off special teams and had me playing running back. Starting, and you know, from then on, you know, I had a pretty good career. Met some pretty cool guys. Got into a pro day after, you know, having the All-American senior season. Won a national championship my junior season. At the pro day, I met Jim Caldwell. I want to say he was the only coach there. So, you know, it was the only head coach. The rest were like scouts, and Mr. Quinn was there too. So when I saw him after my workout, you know, I thought I did pretty good. I talked to a couple scouts, but not many. I seen Coach Caldwell out the corner of my eye, so I had to go introduce myself to him. Sure. And then I did that, and you know, I feel like he enjoyed my company, him and Mr. Quinn. And then came came the third day of the draft, I got a call for a rookie minicamp invite. Went to Allen Park. It was crazy.
Oh wow,
it was crazy. I've been since about my freshman year in college. I've been going to the Lions training camps every year. So the woman at the front desk, she asked me if I needed directions. I'm like, I know exactly where I'm going. I didn't need no flight, no directions. I know exactly where I'm going. So I went there. I had a ball, but at the same time, I knew it was business. I felt like I did everything in my power. You know, I don't have any regrets from the mini camp. I thought I did pretty well. Excellent. I was told I did pretty well in the stay in shape. So, and now we're here. I didn't get a contract offer, but, you know, at the same time, you know, I have to stay ready because at any moment I can get a call from them or any other team. Those guys talk. So, I have agent with my agents working. So, from there we'll see. But it's definitely been a unique role, challenging role. But I think, with me being undersized and coming from a small school, I think that all played a part into it. But I think that just makes my story, a little unique. So, sure. When I do, I try to speak things into existence. When I do make it, I'll have something to tell, the kids here in Detroit. It's just really nothing stopping you. So,
you got to stay positive about it too, because you do seriously never know when that phone's gonna ring.
Man, guys get calls all the time. Working at Foot Locker or bagging groceries, you never know, man.
You don't want to have a bag of Cheetos on your belly when they call. That's for sure.
No. I actually know a guy who he was working as a shoe salesman at Dick's Sporting Goods, and was staying in shape and working out. He Jeremy Jones from Wayne State. Was a defensive back, and he had just gotten released by the Bears, and the Colts called him while he was selling shoes to somebody at Dick's.
Yeah, I would have dropped the shoes right there.
Yeah. Yeah. He went down. He wound up retiring. He had a shoulder issue, but it's the same sort of deal, man. He kept himself in tip-top shape, and that actually leads me to one of the questions I want to ask you. Like, how much do you still work out a day? I mean, you have to stay in optimal shape, so what's that like for you?
Well, those guys are going at it. Those guys are working out. The guys that are in camp, they're working out every single day. So, I try to work out with my trainer Monday, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. So about 4 days out the week. And then maybe on Wednesday or Saturday, I might get some extra work in on the field or something, grab a quarterback and throw the ball around. But, those guys are in shape. So if I'm going to get a call, I can't be subpar compared to them. So I try to – y'all try to keep myself as busy as I can. So when that time do come, I'm right next to them.
So as a guy who wants to be a running back and you're out there working out and staying in shape, what are some of the things that you do differently from other players to help keep you ready and ready to hit the field?
For me, I think diet plays a big part of it. I'll admit I'm one of those guys who can eat pretty much whatever I want, and my body won't change shape. But at the same time, I can feel the difference between
stay young, BJ.
I'm trying, but I can feel the difference between when I go a week of drinking pop versus a week of just drinking water. So I think diet plays a big part in that. Eating right and just making sure I'm always moving. I mean, a lot of guys lift a lot of weights. I lift a lot. I lift too. Like I consider myself pretty strong. I definitely like to lift weights, but some people think that's just the end of it. You got to do a lot of running too, because football is not, you're moving people, but you got to be able to move yourself. So, I do a lot of field work, a lot of game simulating stuff. As a running back, dipping, cutting, in between cones, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about, for those that don't know you, when you talk about being undersized, let's talk a little bit. I mean, let's talk about your height, your weight, and how you've had to battle that. At times it's got to have been an uphill battle. At other times, I'm sure it's been a benefit. Talk a little bit about that. And I guess first establish, where you're at, and then talk about how that's affected your career so far.
Since I was a kid, I never really passed the eyeball test. So, coaches, as a kid, in Little League, I've had coaches, try to limit me or think about my size or even just, fans in general. But I think once I you know, once they actually see me run the ball, like, it's different when you're on the field with me or you actually get to see the tape and not just the measurables. Like, you know, I like the pro days and all. I get to show some of my explosiveness, but, you know, I don't have a ball in my hands and you can't see my vision. You know, you can't see how I see the field so well or.
And you've got some beautiful tape, man. You've got some great.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, you may have heard my name or seen me at a pro day or, you know, then you see the 5'6", 5'7" next to it and it's like, oh, like, you know, you don't even bother to watch the tape. But those few people who do watch the tape, you know, I think that's when they realize, like, oh, you know, I'm special. And that's where I say I think I'm the best, but I wouldn't go say I'm the best running back in the draft, but I definitely think I'm amongst the most unique. Like, you know, I mean, there's plenty of guys that, you know, may be as good as me, but there's not a lot of guys who can do what I can do, you know. And I don't think there are some teams with, you know, zero people who can do what I can do, in my opinion. So, you know, I mean, I think that's what separates me is, you know, my skill set is so unique. You know, it's just different. And being undersized, it helps me. I've used that as an advantage. You know, when people look at it as a disadvantage, I figure, you know, you can't really see me behind the line. I mean, I had D linemen at the rookie camp. You know, I've never ran behind 6'7", 6'5" linemen, you know, at D3 my union, which is, I mean, those guys in my union can block, but I mean, they're just not 6'7". So when I got up to Detroit and I'm running behind these big hogs and, you know, it's guys 6'8", you know, trying to tackle me, they can't even see past the person that's in front of them. So I just use that to my advantage and, you know, hop in and out of holes. And I think that's what's always helped me when it comes to me being undersized.
Sure. And let's talk a little bit, you know, before the interview, we talked a little bit about as a guy like you, who's kind of got that tougher road and who's got to grind a little harder and get that little extra out there to be able to get seen and noticed and get your shot. You know, you're not just out there. You're not just playing. There's a lot of planning that goes into what you're doing. And you're looking, you know, you got that Lions piece and you got to talk to the coaches and Mr. Quinn, the general manager. What's mm-hmm. the plan? You know, I know it's got to be disappointing coming out of there without a contract, but it sounds like they hit some good praise for you and some good possibilities for you. What's the plan now? How do you kind of take that with you and kind of revamp your view?
Yeah, I think initially when they sent the trials home, when you first hear that, you know, it kind of hurts. You know, you thought this was going to be, you know, it. Like, you get your contract and you stay there, and, you know, it's the big moment. But, you know, it didn't happen. So, you know, when it goes down like this, maybe for a hot second, you might have your head down. But, I mean, immediately I pick my head up and I'm like, okay, what's next? So, I mean, it's not going to end here. I mean, if I came this far and just decided to just give it up after 3 days, then I wasted my time even going there. So I was prepared for the worst. And, you know, going forward, I was like, you know, okay, now it's about, you know, why or how would I get, you know, if not on this roster, any other roster, how do I have to get my name out there, maybe some exposure. Maybe I have to, you know, redo my tape. You know, I redid my tape. I made it more, at first it was just senior highlights, but I added all my highlights together. Just stuff like that from all my years. I added the entire highlight. I'm constantly emailing, you know, coaches. I'm talking to other coaches. I'm talking to coaches about coaches. You know, just you know, constantly it's marketing yourself. You know, showing people what you can do, because you never know who's looking. And I think that may be one of the problems. That may have been one of my problems. I may have not had the right set of eyes on me. For instance. Tyree Cohen, we have similar dimensions, and I will say similar play style. You know, I really like his game. I feel like we're pretty much close to the same back, and I was happy when he got drafted. And but it just, I mean, it just goes to show. I mean, you know, he was at a bigger school. He might have went viral, I think, like doing a backflip catch or something. And you know, since then he took off. You know,
he had some fun stuff, man. Yeah.
And I'm glad for him, man. Like, that's what helped, you know, that's what helped push me, like, knowing that, you know, I can keep going on. So,
and that's true. A lot of guys, they kind of get that they do something. I mean, there's a guy, the kicker that rolled through Detroit for a while there, Kickalicious, that everyone was hot on because he was
kicking balls into trash cans while flips upside down off a trapeze and stuff.
You got to know these scouts are people too. You know, they find things entertaining too. I mean, you know, they see these things, you know, they measure you by it. And, I'm not saying it's wrong. I mean, you know, maybe my tape, I wouldn't be mad if my tape, you know, went viral on Twitter or something. And then, you know, it's, you know, say somebody like Chad Ochocinco retweets it. Now everybody sees it. Now it's a lot of buzz. Next thing you know, I got a contract. I mean, it happens that way for some people. I mean,
it really does. And that puts pressure on teams to find out who your agent is and to contact him and be like, hey, this guy's local. He's working right out. You know, we can go get him. Yeah. So I got to ask you, you played youth ball with a guy that I'm very interested in, running back at Ohio State, Mike Weber. Tell me a little bit about what Mike was like when he was young, and what do you think he's going to do when he gets his shot with the NFL? Because it's going to come for him.
Mike. Oh, I it's weird calling him Mike because we called him Mikey growing up. But Mike, we both played on the same little league team growing up. But he's a few years younger than me, so he played with my little brothers, and on that level. They had a year. I think it was my little brother's first year. He played behind Mikey. I think Mikey went he was like the best player in his division, like every year. And he went undefeated almost every year. I think he went his last game. He won the championship at Ford Field. So, since we were younger, we knew he was going to be special. And, you know, he got a real good foundation with his family. And that ended up, you don't really see that a lot in the city. So I think that helped him. He stayed on the right track. You know, he stayed in his books, stayed out of trouble. It's that simple. I mean, if you can run a rock and you pay attention in class and you stay out of trouble. I mean, he did everything the right way. Still doing everything the right way. I'm proud of him. I'm happy for him. So
and there's a lot.
He's gonna be good.
Awesome. That's good to hear.
Once he gets to the league, I think that foundation will stay true. Because, it hasn't shaken them yet. So
let me ask you, you talk about staying out of trouble and that kind of stuff. Even after you moved to Bel Air, right, the idea of people being around you maybe trying to pull you down, is that a reality no matter where you are? Or is it really a decision that you have to make based on your environment specifically?
I think no matter where you're from, where you're raised, there's going to be some kind of adversity. I mean, even if you are from Bel Air, you're going to be faced with problems. But I mean, from specifically being from Detroit, like an area from Detroit, naturally you're going to grow up and you're going to have friends growing up, that you might have to separate from. I had friends growing up who, I'm not really as close to anymore because, it might not be what's best for me. As far as me staying out of trouble and stuff, you never know, who's around and, just things like that. You just try to stay out of all of that stuff. And, I think it's the people who don't want to, who don't want to leave that life alone. They go off to college and, they come back and they come back home and then they get in trouble. And now they can't go to college. They can't finish out school because they didn't got in trouble. So, I mean, I try to tell kids it's really nothing here as far as that goes. You don't want to, if you're at school, stay in school, things like that. So I think that's what the main thing is, being able to know your environment, know what's going on around you, know the people you're around, the things you're around. I think sometimes people just are unaware of that, and it's not even their fault half the time. It's just what they're raised. What they grow into.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to leave that sometimes. I mean, these people have been with you for so long, exactly. And a lot of guys, they can't let go of the people. And the people, it's been my experience anyways, a lot of guys, they don't realize that these are bad influences on them. And
right. They don't.
You get caught in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Exactly. And,
it's good of you that you've recognized that a little bit. That'll only help you.
Yeah, I've had parents. Like I said, they try to keep me out of that type of stuff. And so far it's worked. So
that's great. That's great. All right.
You're a dad yourself, right?
Yeah, I am. I have two boys. I had one my freshman year and I had one my redshirt freshman year. And I had one this past year, my senior year.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. You got your own little team going, man.
Yeah, I'm working on that starting five.
You know you're in trouble when they get quicker than you.
I know. Well, one of them might be. He reaches for things and, you know, he grabs them and he snatches them so fast, you know.
That's awesome. All right. So you were just on Monday, you were at a training camp, you visited Lions camp. Anything come out of that? I mean, what's the plan for you from here? Is it to keep healthy, keep working out? Any thoughts of the CFL or anything else in the interim if it doesn't blossom at the NFL level yet?
Yeah, at the Lions camp, I really came up there just to check it out. You know, it's football. I knew it was the last day of camp. You know, I was like, it's the last day. You know, I go to the camp every year. It's nothing's changed. I'm gonna go watch them play some football. So when I went up there, I actually seen Eric. I seen Eric up there. He was I talked to him and we sat there and we talked for hours. And then Coach Joe Marciano walked over towards the bleachers. He was talking to one of the security guards, and you know, I said, why not? I mean, me and him were pretty close during my time there. So I went and spoke to him, and you know, we had a couple laughs. We talked, we caught up, and they told me to stay in shape. They said they might know some, you know, if things won't work out in Detroit, you know, because you never know how the roster thing, shakes out. He actually introduced me to a CFL scout. That was a friend of his while I was there. So, I mean, that's just how, you know, the networking thing becomes, you know, and I went into that, you know, unexpected. You know, I wasn't expecting to talk to Coach Joe Marciano, but, you know, that happened. So that's another CFL connect I got. That's if I go CFL. You know, you know, like, again, like, you never know who calls. The NFL team may call. Detroit still may call. Living like that is you know, the crazy part. You know, you literally never know who or when, you know, or, you know, what it takes to get that call. But you just got to stay ready. You know, they say that over and over. Stay ready, stay ready, stay ready.
Well, so. It sounds like you're doing it, man. And I tell you, there's not a guy we hope for more to make his break and show what he's made of, because you are a true gentleman, a hard worker, and if anyone hasn't seen your tape, they have to go take a look, because it's amazing.
It's fun.
Appreciate that. Yeah, that's what I think. I think I'm pretty fun to watch, I would say.
Awesome. Well, BJ Mitchell, thank you so much. And when you get signed, we'd love to have you back on to talk about it a little bit more and kind of break down where you've gone from here.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'll definitely be back on the show once I'm on the team, which will be soon.
All right, man. Love to hear it. BJ Mitchell, check him out. He is the guy, ace_BJ_. And he's putting highlights up there all the time. Great, great stuff. Thanks a lot, BJ. Thanks for joining us, man.
Thank you.
Time for a different kind of breakdown with today's special guest.
And we got another special guest. One of my heroes, one of my all-time heroes. It's our hype video master, Mr. Slow Lights, Sandman. Dude, you are the man. How are you doing? Thanks so much for joining us today.
I am so good. I am so good. How are you, gentlemen, tonight?
I have to agree. You are so good.
We are thrilled to have you with us after spending a lot of time with you over the weekend. And that's why we're having you on, because you treated us to a very special experience, and we're eternally grateful for it. And we'd love to have you talk about it and talk about, you know, the improvements that you've seen and the experience that you got.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
I think one of the things that we always talk about this on the show is, you know, the Bob Quinn experience, what's changed with the team, Caldwell, the players, all that kind of stuff. But we don't really get around to talking about that fan experience and what's going on. And, you know, there was the hiring of Rod Wood. There were some questions about that from people. He's not even a football guy. He said he wasn't a football guy. He came out and said it. Oh, my God. You know, all the conversation about that. And, you know, it felt after we, you know, after you treated us to that great experience, for lack of any other better way to say it, it was like, holy cow. This guy deserves, I think, a pat on the back and a thumbs up. And I think people need to understand what's gone on. And I think, you know, you're the perfect guy because you've seen so much. You've been a season ticket holder since the Silverdome days, right?
Not quite, but soon thereafter. So I've been around the block for sure.
For
for sure. I've seen the ups and the downs.
So let's talk about a little bit. When you first started out, I mean, look, if you're going to buy season tickets, you're starting out, you're feeling good about what you're doing, right? That's a significant outlay of money to buy those tickets the first time. So you're like, I love my football team. I love my city, all that kind of stuff. I feel good. Then after a couple of years, you're laying the money out and the team isn't performing and you feel kind of like, what's the experience here? So talk a little bit about those Tom LaWand years and what it was like to be a season ticket holder with all the different parts of the show, preseason and the games and all that.
Yeah. So, you know, when I first became a season ticket holder, really the only thing that came with being a season ticket holder was literally the seats. I was a club member from the beginning, so I always had, you know, a little bit nicer seats. But literally all I got was the seats, you know, the extra food stuff upstairs was there, but it wasn't really great. You know, there weren't any perks to come along with being a member at all. Until about 2009, I think, 2010, they finally opened up training camp for people to come and go see it. And man, what a clusterfuck that was. They were underprepared. They didn't have lines ready. People just bum rushed through the gates. They had, you know, like caution tape on flimsy poles, keeping people from, you know, bum rushing players.
That worked well, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, it really wasn't, a good experience other than, you know, having seats, I guess. And even then, you know, the team wasn't super great a while there. Right. So even those weren't didn't feel like a great investment of time, I guess is how I would put it. Especially once, you know, like HD TVs became, you know, completely mainstream. Everything became HD. You know, the home experience really became almost better than the at-game experience, you know, back in the day.
Yeah, parking, driving down, coming back after, you know, you can't have too many beers, right, because you got to drive, all that kind of stuff. That's a great point. I hadn't thought about the change that high-def television and home theater made to that experience. It really did improve the home experience. And if you're just sitting, all you're getting is seats, you know, I've got a lot more comfortable seat in my living room.
Exactly. The bathroom's 10 feet away. You can make whatever food you want. Exactly. You don't have to pay $20 to park in your garage. You know, there's a lot of perks of being at home. So, what kept me on was, number one, eternal Lions hope, which we all experience. We all have that.
My heart's pounding deep.
Exactly. And then number two was kind of obligation, probably isn't the right word, but I enjoyed the fact that I was supporting my team directly. You know, I was there to scream. I was there to yell. I was there, you know, during the highs, during the lows, you know, that is kind of important to me, but yeah, it was definitely, there were times that it was incredibly tough.
So Rod Wood comes in and fans are a little concerned and I'm concerned as well. And you know, this guy who admits that he doesn't know much about football, were you expecting anything better? And tell me some of the things that you've seen from him that make him that much better than the man I don't like to talk about, Tom LaWand.
You know, it's funny about Rod Wood because I feel like I probably felt the same as probably 95% of the Lions base, that when he got hired in, it was all the bad signs, right? He was a friend of the family, which is what we have been experiencing forever. Tom LaWand was a friend of the family. You know, Martin Mayhew was regarded because he was, you know, has been here. You know, he knows everybody. So that's why he got the job after, you know, he who shall not be named. You know, so he hit a bunch of negatives, which was, you know, he was a family member to them, basically. He had no football knowledge. He said as much. He came out and said, I'm a football fan. I have Matthew Stafford on my fantasy team, but that's about the extent of my football prowess.
This is the last thing you want to hear. who the team president has on their fantasy team.
it was legitimately scary, you know, because we really didn't know Martha at that time. You know, we knew that she came in and drove her golf cart through the building and was shooting fired Nerf darts at people, you know. and we all enjoyed that. We all loved that. But we weren't sure about this. And then, you know, the more I heard him talk, I started feeling a little bit better about it, but really I kind of needed to see, you know, what are you going to do? because realistically, I didn't really know what the team president was supposed to do because Tom Luan did so little. You know, we really didn't get a sense of what a team president actually does for a team.
That's a great point.
Until Rod Wood came in. And I can tell you that it's kind of been, or not even kind of, it has been an eye-opening experience. Just everything has changed, you know, from the input that he has taken. You know, I got the opportunity to go in and do a focus group with a bunch of other season ticket holders. And literally we listed off maybe 30 or 40 things that we all thought could be improved on the game day experience. And the next year, like probably 90% of that stuff had been fixed. It was amazing. Wow. It was like, you know,
my God, he listens.
I couldn't believe it. Like, he cared. You know what I mean? Like, he was treating the team the way that a fan would treat it. You know what I mean? Like, he, like, oh man, you know, people have been asking for cheerleaders for 60 years. Why don't we have cheerleaders? Oh, it's a money issue. And then here's where I think it gets neat is that because he's been managing the Fords' money for so long, I think that maybe they are greenlighting a lot of stuff that maybe they wouldn't if it was somebody else.
Very interesting take. Yeah. It feels like, and maybe for better or for worse, I think for better, that the team went from being run a little bit like a mom and pop shop to more of a true professional organization with clearly delineated lines of management. You know, I often, with Tom Luan and Martin Mayhew, I got confused between their jobs. It really seemed like squishy in the middle as to who was responsible for what. And when you don't have responsibility and accountability clearly defined, that makes for some issues and that makes for some problems. And it just, as a fan and what we saw, it seems like this has really, really helped the organization know what it's doing and to make for a better experience for the fans altogether.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. There was always that weird gray area between Luan and Mayhew where Luan would handle cap money, but Mayhew was in charge of finding the guys and getting them signed. You know, it's like, to me, that doesn't make a lot of sense. So when Rod Wood and the Ford family hired Bob Quinn and they said, listen, if it has anything to do with football at all, that's Bob Quinn. He's going to hire anybody he wants. He's going to fire whoever he wants. He's going to sign players he wants. He's going to not sign who he doesn't want. And my job as president is literally to take care of everything that is not football related as far as the Lions organization goes. And it just blows my mind that we're just now seeing that. It's kind of weird.
We get to see a lot of the changes firsthand, thanks to you, for our experience on Saturday. And I'd just love for you to, you know, talk about what we got to do, what you shared with us, and a little bit about, you know, some of the things that caught your eye. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the things that caught our eye with it as well, because, man, it was awesome.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a neat thing. The Lions, you know, I don't know if I'm lucky or what it is, but I seem to get reached out to a lot for these kind of weird things. So they reached out to me and said, hey, you know, as a club member, we really want to get your input on, you know, how everything looks. You know, what does the new area that we just, you know, basically finished building, you know, how does that look to you? And, you know, if can we tape it and whatnot? And I said, hey, can I bring some friends? And they were like, hell yeah. And I was like, hell yeah. So, yeah, you know, it was cool. It was cool. We got to get kind of a private tour of the North Club, which is the side that I'm on, and see what they've been doing to build it up. And you can definitely tell where that $100 million went. It definitely, you know, Ford Field was never a shabby place, but it was never fancy or nice, I guess is how I would put it. Even the nicer areas were still concrete and, you know, 1/8-inch thick carpet, you know. Yes. So it really wasn't nice. You could tell that you were in a fancier area, but definitely not up to standards of other places. So they've upped their game immensely. It's kind of a crazy step, you know, to go from the old into the new, just because they, you know, they expanded the north side so much. They removed the whole bottom area that used to just be open to general public, and I think people would, you know, smoke outside there. So they kind of closed that off and gave the north area a much nicer downstairs bar area where you don't have to go up steps from your seats to get to the bathrooms and stuff like that. But, yeah, you know, it was kind of crazy just walking out for the first time from the upper deck and seeing those video boards for the first time.
Gorgeous, aren't they?
I honestly, I couldn't believe it. You know, it's another one of those fun Luan to Wood things that I didn't think the old video boards were that bad, but I'm not going back.
Do you remember when they played the video on that of the original size of the board and how much, what is that, 4 or 5 times bigger than the boards that were there last year? It's incredible. Easily. And then they put boards in the back of them for the folks whose view was obstructed so they can see as well.
That was the coolest part, actually, for me, because when we came up behind the video board with the Lions personnel guys, and, you know, we saw those two little, I mean, they're littler than the big ones, but they're not little. But yeah, it's just like that kind of thought, you know, that you didn't see in old Ford Field. You know, there's a lot of opportunity in old Ford Field that they didn't take that now you can see that somebody is actually using their brain and saying, hey, what about these people that also paid money to get in here? Even if it's $30 a ticket, we should take care of these people. And like those video boards are a perfect example of that.
Yeah. The other one that I noticed a lot, and I noticed this in the club level, because you literally could not look anywhere without seeing a television monitor. And one of the things that they said was that they installed, 1,500 more TVs around the stadium. There is no excuse to miss any of the action that's going on the field. And they're not the little, you know, 19-inch hanging in the corner of the concession stand. These are like, you know, 40 to 50-inch flat screens
4K
that are showing the action. And they're everywhere. And they're smartly placed, too. It was the other thing that got me, and I know Sam, and I know this got you too, was when we looked down on the floor and we saw the embossed Lions in there and first of all, it's not carpeted anymore, and the old carpeting was crap.
Oh, horrible. Horrible. I got carpet burn on the bottom of my shoes.
I'm not surprised. But the yard lines from where you're at on the field go through the club level on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a touch that, you know, that's somebody who's thinking about what they're doing and cares about the fan experience. You know, they're not just, oh, let's throw some money at this. They're like, let's be smart at how we throw money at this.
Yeah. You know, and one of the cool things that the Lions representative said to us, you know, that struck with me was that we wanted to carry football throughout. So back in the day, the club section was basically like a bar that was dark, and it had a few TVs in it, and it had a few seats, but really it wasn't a whole lot. And you definitely couldn't tell you were in a football stadium when you were up there. It just kind of felt like you walked into a crappy bar off a street, you know, that happened to have football on a few TVs. So when he said that they were trying to carry football throughout, you could definitely tell that, especially like you said, with like the markers on the floor telling you what yard line you were at, the big Lions logo right in the middle. They had, you know, all the colors were matching now. They had silver chairs and blue accents.
The wood-fired pizza oven in the back corner that I can't wait to taste something out of that bad boy.
With the big Lions logo on it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, it's just such an amazing thing what Rod Wood has done to just enhance the experience of everyone, you know, as a whole. So not only, you know, if you get cheap seats, you can have the amazing video boards, you have the cheerleaders, you have the upgraded sound system that I think they're still trying to work out a few kinks in. But then if you do spend the extra money to get into the club or the suite levels, you know, there is a much, you know, you feel like the money that you spent is actually going towards something more than just, you know, the seat that you park your butt in.
But it did go to the seat too. And I tweeted a picture of Riz, who is, what is it, Riz? 6 foot, 42 inches tall, something like that?
No, I'm 6'5".
Okay, so, okay. Yeah, that's what it was. Sorry.
Only 6'5". Let's not, you know.
That's right.
And there he is. Here's this giant of a man sitting comfortably in the seat itself. They were able to put it together so you got some extra leg room there. So even if you're not, you know, at the video screen, at the club, the sitting in your seat watching the game is even there is a better experience. They've really done a great job.
I mean, they did.
Ford Field.
I'll even add to this
to go anyway.
They gave foot room. One of the problems that taller people like me have is that we also have big feet, and they don't account for that when they put the seats in front of you up. They like put them all the way to the back, so you don't have anywhere to put your feet. They're curved enough that you have places to put your feet where you're not putting them into the people in front of you. That doesn't happen everywhere. I'll just put it that way.
No, and it's funny because earlier when I said that they had done 90% of the things that we had asked for in my focus group, you know, we went up to 93% when they fixed the seats in the club section. I'm not a tall guy. I'm like 5'11", 6 foot with shoes, you know, normal standard guy. And my knees would touch the seats in front of me. So anytime I took Jeff to a game with me or I took another friend that was taller, I always felt horrible, especially if it got packed, you know, like on a Monday night football game or whatever. You felt like you were in an airplane seat. The seat itself was comfortable. It was padded. But your knees and your legs were just jammed in there so tight. If people had to walk past you, it was just a nightmare. And, you know, what they did with these seats, I think they said that they gave 4 inches extra just by changing the seats.
That's huge.
Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yep.
And it's a very welcomed thing. Very, very welcomed.
For sure. All right. Yeah, great things afoot at the field. I thought that was something good to talk about. I mean, we have a lot of stuff we talked about earlier about the players, and we spend so much time on that. The fan experience is something that I think deserves some attention, and what Rod Wood is bringing to this organization is just impressive. This is truly an organization that seems like it's turned a corner on the professional side, and boy, on the player side, they look pretty good too right now. So, hey, Sam, man, thanks so much for joining us, talking about it, and also thank you so much for sharing that experience with us. It was great to kind of get a look at all the stuff that's happening and some of those changes and get a preview ahead of the season this year.
Absolutely. It's always good hanging out with you guys.
All right. Hey, that's going to do it for the show this week. Riz, thank you so much for joining, filling in for Case. Case was busy, as we said earlier, and I really appreciate you coming in and filling in for him for the show this week, bud.
My pleasure. It was fun to continue our conversation from the weekend. We miss Case, but it was fun. Thank you for the opportunity to fill in, and Case will be back next week.
Yeah, he will. All right, remember, we're looking for your involvement in the show. Don't forget to give us those comments in the subreddit. Let us know what you think of the show, what's working, what's not. That helps us stay number one. Also, don't forget about us on Patreon, patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast, or click on DetroitLionsPodcast.com and hit that Patreon link. $1, $2, $5, $1 million, whatever you can spare to help the show is most appreciated. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, and follow us on Twitter. It's @DETLionsPodcast, @DETLionsPodcast. It's the best place to see Case
in his furry costume.
Help us out on Amazon. As we said, it's a great way to help the show. And leave us a voice message via Skype @DetroitLionsPodcast. That's all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast, or call us in the Lions line at 929-33-LIONS. It's 929-335-4667. Drunken messages are most welcome. Mean tweets, whatever you got. Give us a call. Leave a message. You get a chance to hear yourself on the show. Make sure to go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Subscribe to the podcast. That way we can come inside your little box automatically. Thank you for tuning in. And we're going to see you next time on the Detroit Lions Podcast. It's your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection.
Final seconds winding down. And look at that. How big is that? Chris and Case out of time. Pack the bags, start the plane. This show is over.
Let's bring it here together. Let's go. Woo! Let's go, baby. Lions on three. 1, 2, 3.